This is Wednesday, October 1st. Welcome to the new month of October. This is Kindergarten Cop, and I will be reading today from the News Gazette, October 1, 2025. I'm going to start by reading the article, "As Manhunt for Shooter Continues, Neighbor Recounts Bizarre Events. He plans to sue for damages to house if suspect is found," by Dave Hinton for the News Gazette. This is from Gibson City. Kyle Shippert walked up to his Gibson City home in the 100 block of Ash Street during the wee hours of August 9. It was after 2 a.m., and he had received a ride to town after his car had broken down in Mahomet. He couldn't have been prepared for what greeted him. Shippert said his next-door neighbor, David D. Jordan, was standing under a streetlight in Jordan's front yard. Jordan was naked. Shippert hollered at Jordan, whom he said scurried to hide behind some trees in his yard. It was just the beginning of a bizarre night. Shippert said he called police. Three officers arrived, and he told them what he had seen. They headed to Jordan's house. Shippert waited on the front porch. After officers knocked on Jordan's door, he heard popping noises, and he knew what it was, the sound of gunfire. Two of the law enforcement personnel were struck, and the third was unhurt. Shippert headed indoors to escape getting hit. He said the commotion sounded like a gunfight, but authorities later said the officers had not returned fire. He believes some of the noise came from exploding ammunition in Jordan's home, which he had set on fire. Shippert watched the fire spread. "I watched from my window my garage burn down," he said. The detached garage sat about 3 feet from Shippert's house. Shippert said the fire also caused considerable damage to his residence. He lauded the work of first responders. At one point, an ambulance drove up to the scene, but police ordered the driver to back up because it was an active shooting scene. The wounded police, one a Gibson City officer and one a Ford County Sheriff's deputy, were taken to area hospitals and have been released. Both were placed on administrative leave. The deputy, who has been serving for 6 years, was struck in the left knee and left arm. The officer, who has been serving for 1 year, was hit in the left hip. Jordan's house was a total loss. The morning after the shooting, area fire departments combed through the wreckage but found no sign of the owner, which set off a manhunt. So far, he has not been found. Among the tips of Jordan's possible whereabouts was one that he had been seen in the Sibley area, but the tip, which resulted in a searching involving multiple law enforcement agencies, yielded nothing. State police are in charge of the investigation. Sergeant Melissa Albert Lopez said there is no additional information to report. Meanwhile, Shippert has filed a legal complaint in Ford County Circuit Court against Jordan for damage to property. A legal complaint is the initial document filed by a plaintiff to start a lawsuit. It outlines the allegations against the defendant and specifies the legal grounds and relief sought. Shippert is seeking in excess of $50,000 to replace the garage and to repair his home. Represented by the Bloomington law firm Kraft, Wood & Kelly, Shippert is seeking a bench trial and asks for a judgment in an amount greater than $50,000 for both compensatory damages and punitive damages, together with costs and fees and whatever other equitable relief the court deems proper. I will now be reading the article titled "Bowling for Soup. The CU Potters Club Fired Up in Effort to Raise Funds for Daily Bread Nonprofit," by Luke Taylor. All year, ceramic artists at the Champaign-Urbana Potters Club and beyond have been throwing bowl after bowl, working tirelessly to see just how many they can create. They aren't going through the long process of forming the bowls, firing, glazing, and firing them again just for fun, though it is that too. They're working for a cause, to fill those bowls with soup and raise funds for the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen. Most of us are very fortunate in that we don't have to worry about where our next meal is coming from, said Kathy Cunningham. She's been a member of the Potters Club since 2010, but this is her first time working to coordinate the Empty Bowls event set for October 8th at Silver Creek in Urbana. This is just one way that we can help other people by creating pieces that can generate money that would be donated to the soup kitchen to support their work, Cunningham said. The theme, Empty Bowls, just fits perfectly with what Potters do. The fundraiser has been around since 2007, Cunningham said, but the COVID-19 pandemic threw off the schedule. For the first time since 2021, the Potters Club is bringing it back, alongside partners at Silver Creek. Potters across CU and the surrounding area have been working on making bowls since around January. Many are thrown, meaning they are shaped while spinning on a pottery wheel, but various techniques have been employed, Cunningham said. That means every single one of the hundreds of bowls, an estimated 400 by the time of the event, are handmade and unique. Actually, the challenge is to make bowls that are exactly the same for a set, Cunningham said. Different techniques, different forms, and different glazes make plenty of shapes, sizes, and colors for folks who come to the fundraiser to pick from. Each bowl will cost $25. Once a guest picks out and pays for their bowl, they can head right into Silver Creek to fill it with soup, grab some bread, and enjoy the meal. Cunningham said the restaurant will offer its classic tomato basil soup, as well as a chef's choice option that day. All of the proceeds will go straight to the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, meaning purchasing a meal and handmade ceramic piece also pays forward to buy meals for others. Cunningham said that Silver Creek has been a longtime partner for the event, even through an ownership change, and she was grateful that the business has continued to honor the commitment. The staff she has spoken to were also excited for the entire event. Much of the teamwork involved in putting together the Empty Bowls event is reflective of the nature of working with ceramics. As Cunningham explained, setting up a studio with wheels, a kiln, clay, tools, glaze, and more is more than most any individual artist can afford. Instead, it's common to come together and find communal space, such as the CU Potters Club, which was founded in 1969, where the costs can be shared. Cunningham said the club has no paid staff, so everyone is divided into teams to handle everything from running the kiln to cleaning the studio. The other thing is that pottery artists feed off each other's ideas, Cunningham said. My favorite thing to do is come in and see what's on the greenware shelf and see what's been bisqued. And of course, I love seeing when the final pieces come out of the kiln. I will now be reading the article titled Market Driven, Couple Developing Convenience Store with Quick Service Lunch Counter by Jane Wiersma. Jenny Kim and Vaughn Kimberly have both lived and worked in downtown Champaign for nearly a decade. During that time, the couple felt that two things were missing from the area: a convenience store and a quick place to grab lunch. There's a lot of great restaurants downtown, and especially this year, we're seeing a lot of cool things opening up, but it still is heavily the full-service dining experience, Kim said. The husband and wife duo are looking to fill these gaps by opening Hey Penny Market at 115 North Market Street, or as their slogan puts it, the Market on Market. Hey Penny's is going to be a downtown corner store that's not quite on a corner, Kimberly said. We'll be selling all your daily household convenience items, from milk, flour, and sugar, to frozen pizza and beer, wine, and liquor. We'll also have aspirin and phone chargers and just about everything you need. Additionally, the business will feature a quick service lunch counter serving up sandwiches similar to a five and dime Woolworths type of place from a bygone era, he said. The business does not have an opening date yet. Kimberly said that a very optimistic estimate would have them open by the end of the year, but early 2026 is a more realistic timeline. Fans of Champaign's food scene might recognize the duo behind Hey Penny. Kim bought Hopscotch Bakery and Market, located at 802 West John Street, Champaign, from Kaya Spiegel in spring 2024. Kim and Kimberly met 9 years ago when they were both working at Seven Saints downtown. Kimberly worked at the Bar and Grill from 2016 to 2020. After that, he was the manager at Hyatt's Place Punch Bar and Lounge for the last 4.5 years. When asked what inspired the name for Hey Penny Market, Kim replied that she and Kimberly wanted to evoke kind of a retro feel. It references a currency that no longer exists, a half penny, she said. That's just kind of the nostalgic feel we're going for, that kind of neighborly atmosphere. I'm really excited about it, said Katie Schroeder, who owns the building that will house Hey Penny with her husband, Cord. It's going to be really neat. I think it's going to add something to the downtown that we haven't quite had before. She later added, I think that really they really appreciate the history of the building and the character of the building. According to Champaign Economic Development Manager T.J. Blakeman, the building at 115 North Market Street was constructed between 1897 and 1902. According to an Urbana Free Library digital exhibit about Vice, North Market Street was historically known as Gambler's Row. In 1937, 113.5 and 115.5 North Market Street were home to the Turf Club, which reportedly handled the largest amount of money of any of the three racehorse betting establishments in Champaign, and also had a gambling room for card games. More recently, the property was home to Heartland Pathways, an organization that works to acquire retired railroad lines and convert the areas into trails. Blakeman noted that its founder and longtime director, David Monk, lived in the building until his death in 2022. He added that the property fell into significant disrepair over the years and was sold to the Schroeders in 2024. Kimberly said that the branding for Hey Penny Market will feature a winged horse, both in reference to the business's emphasis on speed and convenience, and the site's history with racehorse betting. He added that the symbol is also another reference to old coinage, as Pegasus was often featured on ancient Roman currency. He and Kim also plan to keep the building's history as visible as possible within the store itself. Schroeder said there's a lot of work to be done to make way for Hey Penny Market. We've already started some of it this week, she said on September 19th, and then we'll start into heavy construction Monday. So we're looking at, there's plumbing work, electrical work, we need to redo the sprinkler system, update it, we need to put bathrooms in. The permit also covers renovations to the building's facade, including doors, windows, and masonry. In addition to remodeling the first floor for Hey Penny Market, Schroeder and her husband also plan to convert the second floor into a single luxury apartment. The city is still reviewing the permit for this work. Our focus was getting the commercial property up and running and getting Vaughn and Jenny's business going, Schroeder said. This is Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. On Wednesdays, we'll introduce the student who make up Year 10 of High School Confidential, powered by Danville Area Community College. Today, Armstrong Township's Aubrey Self. The first hint that Aubrey was interested in teaching. At 3 years old, she set up her bedroom as a classroom. I had three whiteboard easels set up in front of my carpet. I had a teacher's desk and chair that I got from my great-grandpa. For my birthday, I always ask for school supplies and classroom supplies, so I had bulletin boards that I set up with things like birthdays and learning objectives, she said. I had tables and chairs to use as my desks in my classroom that were always set up and ready to teach with name tags for everyone that played school with me. The senior will indeed study elementary education in college. I just love to be around kids, and the fact that I witnessed how some kids are when they come from rough home lives made me realize I needed to become a teacher, and that was my calling, she said. Aubrey runs cross country and track, is an editor on the yearbook staff, president of student council, and vice president of National Honor Society. I'm not going to lie, being involved in a lot can be stressful at times, but I love doing all of it, she said. I love planning things and creating things for the students to have fun with and to have the community involved in. She's a proud resident of Tiny Potomac, the site of Friday's homecoming parade. The lineup includes floats made by community members. They are going all out, she said. I think people are excited for this new tradition that Student Council is bringing to Potomac. Area history. In 1925, 425 newspapermen, their wives, and friends had registered at the University of Illinois for what is expected to be the most successful and instructive convention of the Illinois Press Association in its 60 or more years of history. In 1975, Krannert Center for the Performing Arts experienced the first noticeable rise in ticket sales in 3 years, according to Mikhail Hardy, associate director. Hardy said ticket sales had already risen almost 10% this year for university theater and opera presentations and 10 to 15% for the Marquee series. He predicted a possible intake of $250,000 for fiscal year 1975, compared to $230,000 in 1974. In 2010, the University of Illinois has arranged to lease and possibly buy the Beyond the Chief public art installations in Urbana, with the stipulation that it not be exhibited outdoors on campus, curator Robert Warrior says. The UI will lease the exhibit for 3 years. The installation, featuring 12 native host panels, can be shown indoors, on campus, or anywhere else off campus, inside or out, said Warrior, director of the UI's American Indian Studies program. The UI is paying $2,000 a year to lease the art installation. International History Today's highlight: on October 1, 2017, in the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history, a gunman opened fire from a room at the high-rise Mandalay Bay Casino Hotel in Las Vegas on a crowd of 22,000 fans at a country music concert below, causing 60 deaths and more than 850 injuries. On this date, in 1890, Yosemite National Park was established by the U.S. Congress. In 1903, the first modern baseball World Series began, with the National League's Pittsburgh Pirates defeating the American League's Boston Americans in Game 1. Boston would ultimately win the series 5-3. In 1908, Henry Ford introduced his mass-produced Model T automobile to the market. Between 1908 and 1927, Ford would build more than 15 million Model T cars. In 1910, the offices of the Los Angeles Times were destroyed by a dynamite explosion and fire, killing 21 employees. Union activist J.B. McNamara eventually pleaded guilty and was sentenced to life in prison for the bombing. Next is an article about the meeting of U.S. military leadership titled An Ideological War. Trump calls for using U.S. cities as military training grounds. Defense Secretary declares end to woke policies. This is from Quantico, Virginia. President Donald Trump on Tuesday proposed using American cities as training grounds for the armed forces and spoke of needing U.S. military might to combat what he called the invasion from within. Addressing an audience of military brass abruptly summoned to Virginia, Trump outlined a muscular and at times norm-shattering view of the military's role in domestic affairs. He was joined by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who declared an end to woke culture and announced new directives for troops that include gender-neutral or male-level standards for physical fitness. The dual messages underscored the Trump administration's efforts not only to reshape contemporary Pentagon culture, but to enlist military resources for the president's priorities and decidedly domestic purposes, including quelling unrest and violent crime. "We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military," Trump said. He noted at another point, "We're under invasion from within. No different than a foreign enemy, but more difficult in many ways because they don't wear uniforms." Hegseth called hundreds of military leaders and their top advisors from around the world to the Marine Corps base in Quantico, without publicly revealing the reason. His address largely focused on long-used talking points that painted a picture of a military that has been hamstrung by woke policies, and he said military leaders should do the honorable thing and resign if they don't like his new approach. Though meetings between military brass and civilian leaders are nothing new, this gathering had fueled intense speculation about its purpose, given the haste with which it was called and the mystery surrounding it. The fact that admirals and generals from conflict zones were summoned for a lecture on race and gender in the military showed the extent to which the country's culture wars have become a front and center agenda item for Hegseth's Pentagon, even at a time of broad national security concerns. Politically incorrect, Trump is accustomed to boisterous crowds of supporters who laugh at his jokes and applaud his boasting, but he wasn't getting that kind of soundtrack from the military leaders in attendance. In keeping with the nonpartisan tradition of the armed services, the military leaders sat mostly stone-faced through Trump's politicized remarks, a contrast from when rank-and-file soldiers cheered during Trump's speech at Fort Bragg this summer. Trump encouraged the audience at the outset of his speech to applaud as they wished. He then added, "If you don't like what I'm saying, you can leave the room. Of course, there goes your rank, there goes your future." Some in the crowd laughed. Before Trump took the stage, Hegseth said in his nearly hour-long speech that the military has promoted too many leaders for the wrong reasons, based on race, gender quotas, and historic firsts. The era of politically correct, overly sensitive, don't hurt anyone's feelings leadership ends right now at every level, Hegseth said. That was echoed by Trump. "The purposes of America military is not to protect anyone's feelings. It's to protect our republic. We will not be politically correct when it comes to defending American freedom," Trump said. Senator Jack Reed, the top Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee, called the meeting an expensive, dangerous dereliction of leadership by the Trump administration. Even more troubling was Mr. Hegseth's ultimatum to America's senior officers: conform to his political worldview or step aside, Reed said in a statement, calling it a profoundly dangerous demand. On American soil, Trump has already tested the limits of a nearly 150-year-old federal law, the Posse Comitatus Act, that restricts the military's role in the enforcing domestic laws. He has sent National Guard and active duty Marines to Los Angeles, threatened to do the same to combat crime and illegal immigration in other Democratic-led cities, including Portland and Chicago, and surged troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. National Guard members are generally exempt. from the law since they are under state authority and controlled by governors. But the law does apply to them when they're federalized and put under the president's control, as happened in Los Angeles over the Democratic governor's objections. Trump said the armed forces also should focus on the Western Hemisphere, boasting about carrying out military strikes on boats in the Caribbean that he says targeted drug traffickers. Disciplinary rules. Hegseth said he is easing disciplinary rules and weakening hazing protections, focusing on removing many guardrails the military had put in place after numerous scandals and investigations. He also said he was ordering a review of the department's definitions of so-called toxic leadership, bullying and hazing to empower leaders to enforce standards without fear of retribution or second-guessing. He called for changes to allow leaders with forgivable, earnest, or minor infractions to not be encumbered by those infractions in perpetuity. People make honest mistakes, and our mistakes should not define an entire career, Hegseth said. Bullying and toxic leadership have been the suspected and confirmed causes behind numerous military suicides over the years, including of Brandon Caserta, a young sailor who was bullied into killing himself in 2018. Gender-neutral standards. Hegseth used the platform to slam environmental policies and transgender troops while talking up a focus on the warrior ethos. The Pentagon has been told from previous administrations that our diversity is our strength, Hegseth said, calling that an insane fallacy. Hegseth said it is not about preventing women from serving. But when it comes to any job that requires physical power to perform in combat, those physical standards must be high and gender neutral, he said. If women can make it, excellent. If not, it is what it is. If that means no women qualify for some combat jobs, so be it. That is not the intent, but it could be the result.